You said yes, maybe out loud, maybe just in your head, but somewhere in you, you said yes to this, to opening your relationship. And then something happened in your body that you didn't expect, or maybe you expected it and hoped it would just pass on its own. Because the yes was real, it was. And so was the thing that came right after it. The tightening somewhere in your chest, the 3 a.m. thoughts that hadn't been there before, the moment you looked at your partner and felt something that didn't have a clean name yet. The way your mind kept circling back to this when you were supposed to be somewhere else entirely. That isn't your body telling you that you made the wrong call. That's your nervous system doing exactly what it was trained to do. And it's been training for a very long time. Most of what gets written about opening a relationship starts with logistics, the conversations to have, the agreements to put in place, the practical shape of what this is going to look like. Those things matter, but they aren't the first thing. The first thing is what's already happening underneath all of that, in your body, in the part of you that learned what relationships mean before you had any say in the curriculum. That's where we're starting today. And by the time we're done, I think the logistics are going to look a lot more manageable. Welcome to Untamed Ember. I'm Dr. Misty. Opening an existing relationship is one of the most searched topics in the E&M space, and also one of the most underserved. Most of what's out there starts with logistics. Here's how to have the conversation. Here's how to set up a profile. Here are the agreements to put in place. And while logistics matter, they aren't where most couples actually run into trouble. Where couples run into trouble is in the layer underneath the logistics. The layer their nervous systems have been running since long before they ever decided to do things differently. Today, we're going into that layer. What conditioning actually does in the body when you try to change the shape of an existing relationship? What real dysregulation looks like in this process, and why it almost never looks the way people expect? How to tell the difference between a nervous system that needs more time and one that's giving you a different kind of information altogether? And what it actually looks like to build something that holds. So let's go. Nadia and Will have been together for 6 years when Nadia first brought up the idea of opening their relationship. Will's response, by his own account later, was something close to, "I'm open to that," and he meant it. He was not saying it to keep the peace or to sidestep a harder conversation. He genuinely meant it. And then over the next 2 weeks, he couldn't sleep through the night. He became hypervigilant about small things, where Nadia was, how long it took her to respond to a message, who she was laughing with on a call. He started picking up friction in conversations that hadn't been there before, started over-explaining himself, found himself withdrawn in ways he couldn't quite account for. He didn't connect any of it to the conversation they had had. But from the inside, it didn't feel like a nervous system response. It just felt like him. That's one of the first things that trips people up when they start this process. The body's response to opening a relationship often doesn't arrive labeled as a body response. It doesn't announce itself as fear or grief or activation. It shows up as behavior that has quietly shifted, as a mood that's hard to place, as ordinary things that feel slightly off. Because your nervous system isn't trying to communicate with you in those moments. It's trying to protect you. And protection doesn't wait for you to catch up to it. What Will's system was doing was running threat detection on a situation that, according to everything his body had ever learned about relationships, registered as danger. Not because opening a relationship is inherently dangerous, but because his nervous system had spent decades being shaped inside a framework that had very specific ideas about what it means when a relationship changes shape. And that shaping doesn't pause because your values have evolved. Here's something that matters clinically when you're in this process. Excitement and threat register almost identically in the body when the stakes are high enough. Elevated heart rate, heightened attention, preoccupation, a felt sense that something significant is in motion. Those are the markers of both excitement and hypervigilance. Nadia was reading her activation as excitement because she had been living with this idea long enough for her system to begin settling around it. Will was reading his as a warning signal because he had just entered the conversation and his system had no resolution yet. Same physiological state, completely different interpretation. And neither of them understood yet that the gap between their readiness levels was the actual work. And that gap has a name, asymmetric readiness. It shows up in almost every couple that starts this process. One person has been sitting with the idea for months, sometimes years, reading about it, processing the emotional texture of it, letting their system acclimate over time. The other person heard it in a real conversation with real stakes, sometimes for the first time. Their system is just beginning. Everything feels louder and less certain, and that isn't a fixed incompatibility or a sign that something is wrong with the relationship. It's a timing difference. That's the whole explanation. And it matters enormously because if you misread it as something more permanent, you will keep trying to solve the wrong problem. The more ready partner often doesn't realize that they've had a head start. They assume that because they arrived at readiness through their own process, their partner can get there through a shorter version of that same path. But it doesn't work that way. The nervous system doesn't compress on someone else's timeline. It needs the actual time, the actual experiences, and the actual evidence. Rushing it doesn't accelerate the acclimation. It tends to stall it. Nadia's path to that conversation is a useful example of how that head start actually accumulates. Nadia had been thinking about this for almost 2 years before she said anything to Will. What she had experienced in that time, though she didn't have language for it then, was a slow process of her nervous system learning to sit with something that initially felt enormous. The first time she seriously entertained the idea, her stomach dropped. There was fear there, and also something else that she couldn't name. She thought about it, then she put it down. Picked it back up a few months later, thought about it differently. The fear shifted in texture, became less sharp. The something else clarified into genuine desire. By the time she brought it to Will, her system had had nearly 2 years of processing. She had arrived at readiness so gradually, she had stopped noticing that she was even moving. So Will got a conversation. That differential in preparation isn't a character flaw in either of them. It's the ordinary shape of how this kind of shift tends to begin. One person's interior work becomes visible as a proposal, and the person who receives the proposal is only just beginning the interior work that the other person mostly finished a long time ago. Understanding that gap changes what you ask of each other in those early weeks. Underneath the timing gap, there's something older at work, something both of them were carrying without knowing it. Compulsory monogamy doesn't just teach us what a relationship is supposed to look like. It teaches us what it means when the shape of a relationship changes. And for most people who grew up inside of that framework, which is most of us regardless of what we believe now, opening a relationship was never coded as a neutral act. It was coded as something being wrong, as something not being enough, as the beginning of an ending. Most people who are having this conversation consciously don't believe that anymore. But conscious beliefs and somatic conditioning are two different things. Your nervous system learned those meanings the way it learned everything else, through repetition, through what you witnessed, through the accumulated weight of a culture that treated monogamy as the default setting and everything else as deviation. It absorbed those meanings before you had any say in whether you agreed with them. And here's what that means in practice. You can read every book, do the therapy, have the values conversations, genuinely arrive at a place of believing that opening your relationship is a healthy and intentional choice, and still have somewhere in your body that registers it as loss, as threat, as the part where things start to come apart. Both things can be true at the same time. The conscious framework and the somatic conditioning running underneath it, that isn't a contradiction. That's what it looks like to be a person who grew up inside compulsory monogamy and is now building something different. Some of the most common somatic signals of that conditioning are ones people mistake for clear, logical information. A nauseated feeling when a partner mentions someone else's name. A preoccupation with comparison that won't quiet down. A tight vigilance that activates in otherwise ordinary moments. None of those signals are telling you that your values are wrong or that opening was a mistake. They're telling you that your nervous system learned a very specific story about what those moments mean. A story it absorbed without your consent. And it's going to keep telling that story until it gets enough evidence, enough repeated experience to update it. That updating isn't a mental process. You can't think your way out of a somatic imprint. You can understand it completely, intellectually, and still have your stomach drop when your partner leaves the house for a date. That isn't failure. That's what somatic conditioning actually looks like. It persists at the level of the body even after the mind has moved on. Which is why approaching this process like it's primarily a beliefs problem or a communication problem leaves so much important work undone. Nadia and Will show what that split looks like in practice. Nadia had spent real time working on her own conditioning before she brought this conversation to Will. She had examined her relationship with attachment, thought about her patterns, given herself room to process what she actually wanted and why. Will hadn't done that work yet, not because he was behind, but because he hadn't needed to yet. The idea hadn't been real to him until it was real. And when it became real, all the conditioning he had never had to examine came up very loud and very fast. What he was experiencing was not resistance to Nadia. It was not resistance to E&M as a concept. It was a nervous system that had just been handed a situation with no internal map for it, in a landscape where all the old maps said, this is where you should be worried. The work for him was not to be convinced of something different intellectually. It was to have a different experience somatically, slowly, on his own timeline. And those two things require completely different approaches from a partner. That distinction changes what moving forward actually requires. The way through the conditioning isn't around it, it's through it. Through the actual felt experience of things going okay when the body expected them not to. Through enough small moments of safety that the nervous system begins to update the story it's been telling. That doesn't happen on a schedule, but it does happen. And knowing that it's the process, not a symptom of the wrong relationship, matters enormously for staying in it. Once you understand that, the next question becomes, what does it actually look like when that conditioning is running in real time? Because it almost never looks the way people expect it to. The image most people have of dysregulation is visible, dramatic, a breakdown, a blow up, something that clearly signals distress. The dysregulation that shows up in the early stages of opening a relationship is usually none of those things. It's quiet. It looks ordinary. And that's exactly what makes it so easy to miss. Hypervigilance looks like caring a lot about small details. Preoccupation looks like being distracted or not fully present. People-pleasing looks like flexibility and agreeableness. Avoidance looks like giving someone space. Hyper-rational planning looks like being organized and responsible. None of these look like a nervous system that's overwhelmed. They look like personality traits, like mood, like the texture of a regular week. And they can accumulate for weeks before anyone names what's actually happening. The reason they accumulate without being named has to do with what's called the window of tolerance. It describes the band of activation within which a person can function, feel, and process without either shutting down or going into overdrive. Inside the window, things are manageable. You can stay curious. You can have a real conversation. You can take in new information without it immediately becoming threat data. Outside the window, you're in survival mode. You might not look like you're in survival mode. You might look totally functional. But the part of the brain that's capable of genuine relational presence, genuine nuance, genuine flexibility is offline. And you're running on protective patterning instead. Most couples in the early stages of opening are having their most important conversations while one or both of them are outside of their window. And because neither of them knows how to identify that in the moment, they keep having the same conversations and wondering why it never quite lands. The words are right. The intentions are good. But the nervous system isn't available for the conversation that they think that they're having. Within that dysregulated state, there's a distinction that matters a lot. The distinction that matters most in this process is the difference between fear as information and fear as a veto. These aren't the same thing, and confusing them is one of the most common ways couples stall out or start to destabilize in the early stages. Fear as information says something needs attention. Your system is activated, and that activation is pointing at something real. A need that hasn't been named, a dynamic that hasn't been examined, a part of the foundation that needs more time. That kind of fear is useful. It's data. The goal isn't to eliminate it. The goal is to listen to it closely enough to understand what it's actually pointing at. Fear as a veto says stop, full stop. Nothing about this feels okay, and the only acceptable outcome is for it not to happen. That kind of fear forecloses the process rather than informing it. And it often shows up when the nervous system has been running in low-level activation for long enough that it has exhausted its capacity to stay curious. You can't tell which one you're working with if you're moving too fast to check. And most people in the early stages of opening are moving faster than they realize because the energy of the decision carries its own momentum. Will was spending most of those early weeks in the fear as information zone without any framework for reading it that way. The signals were there, he just didn't have language for them. They felt like personal failings, like a lack of trust, a lack of confidence, a deficit in something. So instead of saying, here's what my body is telling me, he went quiet. And Nadia, who read his quietness as withdrawal, moved faster because in her system, momentum felt like resolution. In his, it felt like being left behind. They were each trying to soothe the same anxiety from completely opposite directions. That dynamic has a specific shape. And once you can see it, it's very hard to unsee. What played out between them is so common, it's almost a template. The more ready partner moves toward logistics and planning. The less ready partner goes quiet. The quieter one gets, the more urgently the planning person wants to problem solve. And the more the planning accelerates, the more the quieter person's system says, I can't keep up. Nobody is the villain in that dynamic. Both people are doing exactly what their nervous systems know how to do under stress. The problem is that those two strategies move in opposite directions. And without a shared language for what's actually happening, couples can spend weeks in that loop without ever getting to the real conversation. The asymmetry of readiness is workable, genuinely workable, but it requires the more ready partner to understand something that can be difficult to sit with. The pace of this process is set by the nervous system that needs more time, not because that person holds veto power over the relationship's direction, but because agreements built on top of unregulated nervous systems aren't stable. They hold fine in calm moments. The first time real activation shows up though, and it will, the structure doesn't hold because it was never built on solid ground. Moving at the pace of the slower nervous system means asking regularly and genuinely, where is your body right now? Not where are you intellectually, not do you still agree with the values? Where is your body? What does it need before the next step makes sense? And then waiting for an actual answer, not a reassurance. Here's where a lot of couples get stuck. One partner asks the question, here's something that sounds like okay, and moves forward. But that okay was not a clear report of readiness. It was the nervous system reducing social pressure. When you're asked to evaluate your own readiness while also managing the implicit weight of not wanting to be the one who slows everything down, okay is often a regulatory response, not an informational one. The two sound exactly the same from the outside. This is one of the reasons that asking once isn't enough. Readiness isn't a fixed state that you either have or you don't. It fluctuates. Someone can feel genuinely settled on a Tuesday and completely flooded on a Thursday. Both of those are real. The Thursday experience doesn't cancel the Tuesday one, but it does mean that checking in has to be an ongoing practice, not a box you tick before you start. It also means that the more ready partner has to stay genuinely curious about their own state, not just their partner's. Because often, the more ready partner is managing their own anxiety through forward momentum. The planning, the researching, the logistics building, it can be a legitimate expression of readiness. And it can also be a way of outrunning the activation that's still there underneath. Nadia would tell you later that she had been doing both. Will eventually described those first weeks as feeling like he was standing at the edge of something while Nadia was already planning the trip. He didn't have words for what he was experiencing. He just knew he was not where she was. And because he didn't have language for it, and because he genuinely wanted this for her, he kept trying to catch up instead of saying, "I'm not there yet, and I need us to stay here a little longer." Learning to say that and to hear it without reading it as a reversal is some of the most important work a couple can do in this process. Not because it slows things down, but because it builds the kind of foundation that actually holds when the stakes get higher. Which brings us to what actually happens when people skip all of this and go straight to logistics, because most people do. The checklist impulse is completely understandable. You're dealing with something enormous and uncertain, and building structure feels like a way to hold it. Agreements, ground rules, timelines. All of this gives the anxious, nervous system something to grip. The issue isn't the structure itself. Structure matters. But the issue is the sequence. Agreements built on top of nervous systems that haven't had a chance to stabilize are agreements that depend on everything going smoothly. The first moment of real activation, the structure will fail. Not because the agreements were bad, but because they were built before the foundation was really ready. Nadia and Will did exactly this. They put together a solid framework in those first few weeks. They were thoughtful about it. They talked through logistics, made agreements, felt like they were being responsible and intentional. And for a while, it worked. Will's nervous system stayed quiet enough. Then, about 3 weeks in, Nadia had plans with someone new. And Will's system, which had never actually resolved, hit the floor. That was not a failure of their agreements. The agreements were fine. It was a foundation issue. They had built the structure without ever having the conversation that needed to come first. Without either of them saying, "Here's what's actually happening in my body. Here's what my nervous system learned about what this kind of change means. Here's what I need before I feel settled enough to take the next step." That conversation had never happened. So, when the first real moment of activation arrived, there was nothing underneath the framework to hold it. The somatic layer isn't the feelings first bonus round for couples who are really into therapy. It's the structural base that everything else depends on. Skipping it doesn't mean you aren't thoughtful or you aren't committed. It means you're following the only model most of us were ever given navigating something difficult. Make a plan and execute it. That model works for a lot of things. Opening a relationship isn't one of them. Because the thing you're navigating lives in the body, not on a list. There's also a subtler version of skipping that's harder to catch. It's when the couple has done some of the somatic work but used it to get to yes faster rather than to get to the actual foundation. Someone shares something vulnerable about their fears, their partner is reassuring, and that reassurance gets converted into readiness before it's been tested. The fear got expressed, it got met with care, and that cycle felt like progress. But expression and reassurance aren't the same as resolution. They're the beginning of the work, not the end of it. And confusing them is one of the most common ways couples end up back at square one after what they felt like was a really good conversation. There's one more thing that gets skipped in almost every couple that starts this process. And it's the question that, in my experience, is the most important one to ask before anything else. It sounds deceptively simple. Most people have never actually asked it. The question is this: is what you're feeling a not yet or a not ever? Those two things live in the body very similarly in the early stages of opening. Both produce activation, both produce a quality of resistance. Both can make the idea of the next step feel impossible. The difference between them isn't always visible on the surface, and confusing them costs people enormously in both directions. Couples who push forward when the honest answer was not ever end up paying for it later, often in ways that are much harder to repair than if they had stayed with the discomfort of that truth earlier. And couples who stop when the honest answer was actually not yet lose something real to a signal that would have shifted with more time and more evidence. So how do you tell them apart? The first place to look is what the activation is pointing at. Fear as information points at something specific, a need, a dynamic, part of the foundation that requires more attention. When you follow the feeling inward, you find something concrete. I need to understand better what the agreements will look like. I need more time before this becomes real. I need to feel more securely connected to you before this next step makes sense. There's a what underneath it. Something that, if it were addressed, would shift the quality of the fear. Not ever often points at something different. Not at a specific need within the opening, but at a more fundamental incompatibility with the vision itself. When you follow it inward, what you find isn't a gap in the foundation, but something closer to, this isn't the relationship I want. Not because something is missing, but because this particular shape of relationship is genuinely not yours. That's a different kind of information, and it deserves to be taken seriously rather than treated as fear to be overcome. The challenge is that conditioning can mimic both of these signals. A nervous system that learned monogamy as the only safe option will produce fear responses to opening that feel like not ever, even when they aren't. The body says no the way it always says no when the familiar is threatened, loud, urgent, and total. It takes real practice to sit with that signal long enough to ask whether it's giving you current information or old information. A question that tends to be clarifying in the very best version of this, with everything going the way you would want it to, with your nervous system having had time to settle, with the agreements in place and the connection solid, does any part of you recognize that as your life? Can you hold the best case picture and find something in your body that says, yes, I know that, that's mine? If the answer is yes, even a quiet yes, that's usually not ever that you're working with. That's usually not yet meeting the conditioning. The path forward is slower, more supported, and more intentional, but it's there. If the answer is genuinely no, if the best case picture still produces something that feels like the wrong life, that's information worth sitting with honestly, as a couple, with support if possible. Not as a crisis, not as a failure, as the truth of what one or both people actually need, which is more useful information than a year of pushing forward would have given you. There's also a third thing that sometimes reads as not ever, and that's grief. The grief of losing the relationship as it was, the version of the partnership that felt complete and finished and known. Opening an existing relationship changes it. There's real loss in that, even when the change is chosen and wanted. A nervous system that's grieving can produce signals that look like rejection of the whole process. But grief isn't incompatibility. Grief is what happens when something you loved shifts into something new. It can coexist with genuine desire for what you're building. Letting yourself grieve the shape of what the relationship was is often the thing that creates space for fully inhabiting what it's becoming. Nadia and Will both had grief in there underneath the activation. Naming it when they finally did changed the texture of everything else. So here's where all of that leads. Once you understand what the body is doing, once you can read the difference between not yet and not ever, once you know that the checklist came before the foundation, the question becomes what to actually do about it. The conversation that needs to happen before any logistics conversation isn't a therapy session. You don't need clinical training to have it. You need to be willing to go slower than feels comfortable and to sit with questions that don't have quick answers. The core of it is two questions. Before you talk about what the opening is going to look like, each person needs to be able to answer honestly. What's my body doing with this right now? And what does my body need before the next step feels okay? Those questions sound simple, but they aren't easy. Most people, when first asked to describe their somatic experience in a relational context, respond with something cognitive. I think I'm okay with this. I believe in what we're building. I understand why this makes sense. All of that's real and worth saying, but it isn't what the question is asking. The question is asking for what the body knows. The tightness or the openness, the quality of settled readiness versus the held tension of not quite yet. Those are a lot different from thoughts about it. It helps to ask outside of a moment of high activation when both people are already in a regulated state. Not right after a difficult conversation, not in the middle of planning, in a quiet moment when both nervous systems are settled enough to actually be present. The body will report more accurately from that place. And the person listening can receive the report without their own system immediately converting it into threat data. For Nadia and Will, that settled moment took a while to find. Nadia and Will finally had this conversation about 6 weeks in, after the breakdown at 3 weeks. The most surprising thing about it, by their account, was how different it felt from every other conversation they had had about opening. Not because of what they revealed to each other, but because it required both of them to actually stop and check in with what was happening underneath the logistics that they had been building. Nadia realized she had more anxiety than she had been acknowledging. She had been moving fast enough to outrun her own activation. Will realized his quietness hadn't been agreement, it had been dysregulation. He had been saying yes with his mind while his body had been saying not yet. That conversation didn't resolve everything, and it wasn't supposed to. The point was that they were finally working from accurate information about each other's actual state. And from accurate information, you can build something that holds. What this looks like in practice, it's slower than your regular conversations. You aren't problem solving, you're reporting. Each person takes turns saying what's actually happening in their body, without editing it into something more manageable or more aligned with what they think they're supposed to feel. The person listening isn't fixing anything. They're receiving that information and letting it matter. That alone is different from most of the conversations couples have in this process. Most of these conversations are trying to get somewhere. This one is trying to find out where you actually are. From there, the question becomes, what needs to happen between now and the next step for your system to feel more settled? Not resolved, not certain, just more settled. For some people, that's more time. And for some, it's a specific conversation. And for others, it's understanding more clearly what the agreements are going to be. The answer is individual, but you can't get to it without asking. And most couples never ask because they assume that if their partner said yes, the body said yes. Those are often two very different things. Once you have that information, the next question is how to take a first step that's actually calibrated to where both nervous systems are. And this is where even couples who have done the somatic conversation often make a second misstep. They take the step that the logistics suggest rather than the step that the nervous systems are ready for. A first step in opening isn't the first date. It isn't the apps, the profile, the conversation with a potential new partner. A first step is the smallest unit of forward movement that both nervous systems can hold without going outside of their window of tolerance. For some couples, that's a coffee with someone new while a partner is at home and reachable. And for some, it's having one real conversation about attraction without any action attached. For others, it's something even smaller, naming out loud, together, that this is real and happening, and sitting with that without immediately moving to the plan. The point isn't to delay indefinitely. The point is to build evidence. Every time the nervous system encounters something that was supposed to feel catastrophic and finds out that it didn't, it updates. The window gets a little wider. The capacity for the next step increases. That isn't a slow process out of being timid. Instead, it's a process to a stable outcome. The couples who rush the first step often spend months recovering from the activation it created. The couples who calibrate the first step to where their systems actually are tend to move through the early stages with far less damage to the foundation that they're building. Nadia and Will took almost 2 months to take their actual first step after the somatic conversation. In their case, that was the right pace, not because they were afraid, because they were finally building from the ground up. And here's what I want you to take from all of that. If you're in this process right now or thinking about starting it, here's what's worth sitting with before the logistics conversation, before the apps, before the first step. The question that tends to be most useful isn't whether you're ready to open your relationship. That question is too large and too cognitive to give you what you actually need. The more useful question is, what's my body saying about this right now? And is that my nervous system speaking or my conditioning? They aren't the same voice. Your nervous system is giving you real-time information about your actual state, the specific activation, the specific need, the specific thing that would make the next step feel safer. Your conditioning is giving you a recorded message from a framework you absorbed before you had any say in whether to accept it. Both of those voices are going to show up in this process. The work is learning to tell them apart. And if you're the partner who brought this conversation to the table, your own somatic experience matters just as much. Your body is in this. Your conditioning is running. Moving forward with more readiness doesn't mean you've resolved more of it. It might just mean that you started earlier. Track your own system, not just your partner's. Ask yourself the two questions before you ask theirs. And one more thing worth keeping close. The goal of this process isn't to become a person who doesn't have any conditioning. It's to become a person who knows their conditioning well enough to work with it rather than be run by it. That distinction quietly changes everything about how you move through the hard moments. When the stomach drops, when the hypervigilance kicks in, when the not yet feeling arrives loud and urgent, you don't have to treat it as a verdict. You can treat it as information. Information you're equipped to read. That shift from being run by the signal to being able to read it is what actually makes this workable. Next episode, we're going into jealousy as a nervous system event, which is actually where this conversation leads once you're in motion. Everything we talked about today is the setup for that one. Before we close, I want to give you somewhere to land with this. If you're in an existing relationship right now or sitting with what it would mean to change its shape, take a moment to actually check in with your body. Not your thoughts about the situation, but your body. What's it doing right now as you sit with this? Notice whether there's tightening somewhere in your chest, your throat, your stomach, a held quality, a bracing feeling. Or notice whether there's something more open and settled in you. Whatever you find, don't judge it. Just notice that it's there and stay with it for a moment. You aren't here to explain it or fix it or decide what it means. You're just here to let it be something you know about yourself. Something you can bring into the conversation with more accuracy than most people bring when they've been trying to outrun what their body is doing. Now, see if you can get curious about where that response learned to do that. Because your nervous system's reaction to the idea of a relationship changing shape didn't come from nowhere. It came from what you watched, what was modeled, what got repeated so many times that it became automatic. The messages, subtle and not subtle, about what it means when something close to you opens or shifts, or becomes something other than what it was. You don't have to trace it all the way back right now. You just have to be willing to sit with the fact that it's there. That underneath your conscious thinking, your values, your genuine desire to do this thoughtfully, there's a nervous system with its own history, and it's part of this too. If you're the partner who brought this conversation forward, notice what it feels like to hold more readiness than the person you love. Notice whether there's impatience in there, or anxiety underneath the momentum, or grief you haven't made room for yet. Your experience in this process is just as layered as your partner's. Take up space in it. If you're the partner receiving this conversation, notice what happens in your body when you imagine a version of this that goes well. A version where you've had enough time, enough evidence, enough of the right experiences, and you feel genuinely settled. Does any part of you recognize that as possible, even quietly, even tentatively? That recognition is information worth sitting with. It isn't a promise you're making, it's just something your body knows. You didn't choose the conditioning you're working with. You didn't ask for a framework that made love feel like a limited resource or taught your nervous system that change means loss, but you're here. Something in you is already building something different from what you were handed. The body will catch up to that. It needs evidence over time that the new thing is safe. And that evidence comes from exactly what you're doing. Staying in it with honesty, slowing down when the system needs it, and letting the nervous system be part of the process rather than something to manage around. Each time you do that, the window gets a little wider. That isn't a small thing, that's actually the whole thing. This has been Untamed Ember. I'm Dr. Misty. The people who do this well aren't the ones who are fearless. They're the ones who learn to stay curious about their fear long enough to find out what it's actually pointing at. That's a skill you build. It isn't a personality type you either have or you don't. And if today gave you language for something you've been trying to name or cracked something open that needed cracking, that's exactly what this space is for. Subscribe to the Untamed Ember newsletter at untamedember.kit.com. That's where the deeper material lives, the extended breakdowns, the things that didn't make it into the episode, the content I write for people who want to go further than a single sitting allows. And if you're interested in therapy, come find me at flowarttherapy.com. I am licensed in Washington State, DC, Maryland, and Virginia. Next episode, jealousy as a nervous system event. Everything we covered today is the setup for that one. The not yet versus the not ever distinction. The asymmetric readiness, the conditioning underneath of it all shows up in what jealousy actually is, which isn't what most people think it is. That one isn't to miss. I'll see you next time.